Subhagam Savilasahasa Nityotsavam Natatripur Drishibi Pivantyo Naryo Narascha Mudita Kupita Nimescha Yasyananam Makarakundala Charukana Brajat Kapola Subhagam Savilasahasa Nityotsavam Natatripur Drishibi Pibhyanto na yo narascha murita kupita nimescha. Yep. Whose? Ananam. Fish. Makara kundala charukarna. Decorated by earrings resembling sharks. And by beautiful ears. Brajat, brilliantly decorated. Kapola, forehead. Subhagam, declaring all opulences. Savila sahasam, with smiles of enjoyment. Nitya utsavam, whenever one sees him, one feels festive. Natatripu, they could not be satisfied. Drishibi, by seeing the form of the Lord. Bibantya, as if drinking through the eyes. Narya, all the women of Vrindavan. Nara, all the male devotees. Cha, also. Mudita, fully satisfied. Kupita, angry. Nime, the moment they are disturbed by the blinking of the eyes. Cha, also. Translation, Krishna's face is decorated with ornaments such as earrings resembling sharks. His ears are beautiful, his cheeks brilliant, and his smiling attractive to everyone. Whoever sees Lord Krishna sees a festival. His face and body are fully satisfying for everyone to see. But the devotees are angry at the Creator for the disturbance caused by the momentary blinking of their eyes. Please repeat. Krishna's face is decorated with ornaments. As stated by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita 7.3, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam viti tatvataha. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Unless one is qualified to understand Krishna, one cannot appreciate the presence of Krishna on earth. Among the Bhojas, Vrishnis, Andakas, Pandavas, and many other kings intimately related with Krishna, the intimate relationship between Krishna and the inhabitants of Vrindavan is especially to be noted. That relationship is described in this verse by the words Nityotsavam Natatripur Drishibi Pibantya. The inhabitants of Vrindavan especially, such as the cowherd boys, the cows, the calves, the gopis, and Krishna's father and mother, were never fully satisfied, although they saw Krishna's beautiful features constantly. Seeing Krishna is described here as Nitya Utsava, a daily festival. The inhabitants of Vrindavan saw Krishna almost every moment. But when Krishna left the village for the pasturing grounds where he tended the cows and calves, the gopis were very much afflicted because they saw Krishna walking in the sand and thought that Krishna's lotus feet, which they dared not place on their breasts because they thought their breasts not soft enough, were being pierced by broken chips of stone. By even thinking of this, the gopis were affected, and they cried at home. These gopis, who were therefore the exalted friends of Krishna, saw Krishna constantly, but because their eyelids disturbed their vision of Krishna, the gopis condemned the Creator, Lord Brahma. Therefore, the beauty of Krishna, especially the beauty of his face, is described here. At the end of the 9th canto, in the 24th chapter, we find a hint of Krishna's beauty. Now we are proceeding to the 10th canto, which is considered Krishna's head. The entire Srimad Bhagavat Purana is the embodiment of Krishna's form, and the 10th canto is his face. This verse gives a hint of how beautiful his face is. Krishna's smiling face with his cheeks, his lips, the ornaments in his ears, his chewing of betel nuts, all this was minutely observed by the gopis, who thus enjoyed transcendental bliss, so much so that they were never fully satisfied to see Krishna's face, but instead condemned the Creator of the body for making eyelids that obstructed their vision. The beauty of Krishna's face was therefore much more appreciated by the gopis than by his friends, the cowherd boys, or even by Yasoda Mata, who was also interested in decorating the face of Krishna. Krishna, the word Krishna, means all attractive. Krishna is the possessor of all opulences, so one of those opulences is all beauty. Whatever we might see in this world that is beautiful or powerful or famous, wealthy, renounced, knowledgeable, that is just a spark of Krishna's splendor. That anything remarkable like that may give us a hint. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in different places, as in the Bhagavad Gita, the beautiful features and opulent features of the material world are described in quite some detail, with a goal to educate the reader as to the presence of the Lord in everything. So Krishna says that, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. So by regular hearing of the pastimes of Krishna and chanting the names and the glories of Krishna, gradually one's attention can become fixed on Krishna. One's mind, one's words, one's activities can all become centered upon Krishna. And this is the secret of Krishna consciousness. This is the goal of life. And it's also the reason why Krishna appears on this planet. Prithinaya sadhanam vinasaya cha duskitam dharma samstarpanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Prithinaya sadhanam means in order to encourage the devotees, to enliven the devotees, so that the devotees can develop full faith in the Lord and strong attachment to the Lord. So which devotees, one might ask, which devotees? Because the real devotees, they're in the spiritual world. They never had any idea to leave Krishna or try to enjoy separately from Krishna. So which devotees? But there are also devotees here. And that's not only the Nitya Siddha devotees. The Nitya Siddha devotees, they're sent by Krishna also with the same purpose in mind, to encourage the devotees who are here. So who are the devotees that are here? They are persons who made some mistake, and due to independent activity fell from the spiritual world, but are now again turning back toward Krishna, having become frustrated in this material world. So that means made mistake, but if one makes a mistake, but he has regret for that and sincere desire to improve himself and rectify himself, then he can be forgiven. So it is like that. We have behaved in a foolish way, but Krishna is always willing to forgive and forget the past and to give mercy again to that person in the form of his transcendental association and transcendental encouragement. So, therefore, Krishna is, by coming here and by sending his representatives, he's offering that opportunity to know him and to develop attraction for him, because not only comes to encourage the devotees, but also to defeat demons, that is to stop the demons from harassing the devotees, because that is the tendency of the demons. Because they're not regretful. They haven't realized their mistake in coming to the material world. But rather they're trying to establish that they're right. They're better than Krishna. Or there is no Krishna. Or they don't have to rectify themselves. They can go on with their materialistic pursuits. This is the mentality of the demons. So, therefore, they don't like anybody preaching the glories of God. And they want to stop it. But Krishna comes to curb down those kind of persons. When he came 5,000 years ago, he killed so many of those persons. And again, he appeared 500 years ago as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in order to give us a way to curb that mentality. So, Sango Pangastra Parshadam, Yagyai Sankirtana Praya, Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. He came with Sango Pangastra Parshadam. He came with his associates and with his weapons, but weapons, what is the weapon of Lord Chaitanya? That's the holy name of the Lord. So, by this process we can kill that demoniac tendency within ourselves and also within other persons. And Dharma Samstap Pranataya. So he's establishing a means or a system of religion which will enable the living entity to connect with him and to develop attraction for him, because not everyone could appreciate the presence of Krishna. Prabhupada is making the point here. There were many persons who knew Krishna, who met Krishna, who were his intimate relatives, but they could not understand his transcendental nature and his supreme dominion over all that be. Just say Jarasandha, Shishupal, Dantavakra. So many persons knew Krishna, but they were not following the proper system for developing love for Krishna. They followed Vedic principles. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that even kings like Jarasandha and others, formerly they followed Vedic principles. So they were quite strict in such things as giving charity to brahmanas and performing different Vedic rituals. In order to kill Jarasandha, Krishna, Bhima and Arjuna had to take the guise of brahmanas and go there and ask him for charity. So because he was a strict follower of Vedic principles, he said, yes, I'll give you charity. But then he realized that these are not brahmanas. They're, you know, in disguise. But anyway, thought, I'll give them charity anyway, I promised. And when they revealed their real identity, still he said, yeah, whatever you want, I'll give you. Take it. So they asked for a fight, of course. And he agreed. All right. Anyway, Kshatriya has to when challenged. But still, the point was that he is ready to accept them on face value and follow the Vedic principle. So he was ready to follow the Vedic principle if they were Brahmanas. He was ready to follow the Vedic principles if they were Kshatriyas. So he was a strict follower. But he couldn't recognize Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of God. In fact, he declined to fight personally with Krishna. He said, I'll fight with Bhima. I won't fight with Krishna because we don't know who is Krishna. What is his position? Is he a cowherd, some village boy, or is he a Kshatriya coming from Mathura, Dwaraka? It's not clear. And the same thing in the Rajasuya sacrifice, when there was discussion who is the topmost personality. Sahadev proposed Krishna is the best personality and we should worship him first. So this was challenged by Shishupal. Immediately he said, who is Krishna? Where does he come from? We don't know his caste, like that. So his position is unclear, therefore he's not qualified. So this kind of mentality, you see, trying to understand Krishna, measure Krishna by some mundane rules and regulations, you know, varna or ashram, this is not very significant, actually. But materialistic people who are proud of their own position, whatever position they're in, whether they're a Brahmin, they're proud, they're a Kshatriya, they're proud, Vaishya, they become proud, have so much money, Brahmana may be puffed up, I know so many verses and slokas, just like that Brahmana when Narada was going to Vaikuntha. He was chanting so many slokas, and he's sure he'll go to Vaikuntha at the end of this lifetime, but he wasn't qualified, because he was puffed up. And some kshatriya may be very proud of his great power, conquered so many people. That was going on before the time that Lord Krishna appeared. That's the main reason why Bhumi went to Lord Krishna. Because so many kshatriyas puffed up, you know, overrunning other kingdoms with their military power, you know, fighting with one another, rattling their swords. You see. False ego. I'm a big man, big kshatriya. So similarly, so many vaishyas, very wealthy person, you know. So having much money, and in this way, making show and feeling very important. And of course, sudra is also that. False ego is everywhere, whatever position one is in. Even in a very lowly position, still he has a tendency to think himself to be very great. So this false ego is a great barrier in understanding who we are and understanding who God is. One has to curb this false ego. It has to be killed. It has to be kicked out, gotten rid of completely, because it's simply obstacle due to this false ego. What is a false ego? It means we're identifying with this material body and with all the trappings of this material body. But this is just like, just like sand. It runs through your fingers. Whatever trappings that might be attached to this body, they're momentary. When you think of the scale of eternal time, these things are momentary, just like that sage, Lomasa Rishi. He was meditating for millenniums. He used to, on the beach, used to meditate. And his disciples said that we'll build you some shelter so that, you know, you'll be protected from the elements. And he said, what is the use? You know, this life is just a moment. So he was living for millenniums. He was such a sage. So he had that vision. So we have to develop that vision also, that our life is eternal, and this time we're spending in this planet, this is just a flash in eternity. Of course, not to say that means one shouldn't behave according to dharmic rules and regulations, according to one's prescribed duty. Yes, one should do as he is instructed by spiritual master. And according to the time and circumstance, one should practice devotional service to Krishna. That is the means of attaining Krishna. And in this age specifically, the main stress is on that particular anga of devotion, which is kirtanam, to chant the holy names of the Lord. So we must give attention to that. Of course, there one can say that one can chant the holy name of the Lord, and he can behave in a different ways. Like say, one could be very renounced, and he could go around in a loincloth with just a japa beads, and the great sages have done that even in this age of Kali. But even that we shouldn't imitate, because we're not sufficiently advanced to that level. And actually we have to behave according to the way which Srila Prabhupada guided us within ISKCON. This is a very practical framework for people in the modern society to know Krishna, to remember Krishna, and to develop their Krishna consciousness. At the same time, not trying to become so renounced that they snap. We've seen many times persons trying to become extremely renounced and focus their attention on Krishna. Just like Prabhupada, he gave it in one purport of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, a description about one African boy who came to Mayapur, and he wanted to fully focus his attention on Krishna. So he built himself a small hut in the fields, and he was chanting a Hare Krishna mantra 24 hours a day. But and he didn't come to the prasadam or class or kirtan or anything. So Prabhupada said, after a few days he left and we have never seen him again. So he tried to, you know, run before he could walk. So this is not advised for devotees in the present time. Learn to crawl first. Learn to crawl first. And then gradually you can start to walk. And then in due course of time you'll be able to run. And finally you'll be able to fly. And that way you'll get back to Godhead. But you have to take it systematically, otherwise you'll trip yourself up and just fall on your face. So, therefore, the means to see Krishna that is given to us, that is given to us by the authorities, the Dharmam tu Shakshat Bhagavat Prinitam, that the path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. So Krishna has given that in the Bhagavatam and the Gita. The Lord Chaitanya, he's, you know, further fashioned that process for application in the Kali Yuga. And the Acharyas, they have further fashioned it, especially Srila Prabhupada. He has fashioned that process into a suitable form that even the most degraded people, they can practice it. Otherwise, people wouldn't have any qualification. The kind of people, many of the kind of people who have joined ISKCON, no chance at all to become devotees. But somehow, by the grace of Krishna, the Acharyas, and especially Srila Prabhupada, they have made it possible for such, you know, low classes of persons who are practically like dogs and cats to change and to become Vaishnava devotees of the Lord and to get the chance to go to the topmost level, back to the spiritual world. So, and to get the chance to hear the glories and the pastimes of the Lord from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a most auspicious day, Sri Krishna Janmashtami. And on this day especially, we should concentrate our attention on Sri Krishna, his transcendental name, form, qualities and pastimes by fasting and not getting busy with all kinds of other activities except hearing, chanting and worship.
Thank you.
to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam this evening. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The Ganges, emanating from the toe of Lord Vishnu, purifies the three worlds, the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Similarly, when one asks questions about the pastimes and characteristics of Lord Vasudeva Krishna, three varieties of men are purified: the speaker or preacher, he who inquires, and the people in general who listen. So, now Sukadeva Goswami is telling Prigat Maharaj the story of the appearance of Lord Krishna. Once, when Mother Earth was overburdened by hundreds of thousands of military phalanxes of various conceited demons dressed like kings, she approached Lord Brahma for relief. Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow. Very much distressed, with tears in her eyes, she appeared before Brahma and told him about her misfortune. Thereafter, having heard of the distress of Mother Earth, Lord Brahma with Mother Earth, Lord Shiva, and all the other demigods approached the shore of the ocean of milk. There they worshipped the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and with great attention recited the Vedic mantra, Purusha Shukta. While entranced, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. He told the demigods, "O demigods, hear from me the order of Shirdakshai Vishnu, and execute it attentively without delay." Lord Brahma informed the demigods, "Before we submitted our petition to the Lord, he was already aware of the distress on earth. Consequently, for as long as the Lord moves on earth to diminish its burden by his own potency in the form of time, all of you demigods should appear through plenary portions as sons and grandsons in the family of the Yadus." The Supreme Lord Krishna, who has full potency, will appear personally as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. The foremost manifestation of Krishna is Sankarsan, who is known as Ananta. This Sankarsan will appear as Baladeva, just to please the Supreme Lord by his transcendental pastimes. The potency of the Lord, known as Vishnu Maya, will also appear with Lord Krishna. This potency, acting in different capacity, captivates all the worlds, both material and spiritual. At the request of her master, she will appear with her different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. After thus advising the demigods and pacifying Mother Earth, Lord Brahma returned to his own abode, Brahma Loka. Formerly, Surasena, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, had gone to live in the city of Mathura. There he enjoyed the places known as Mathura and Surasena. Since that time, the city of Mathura has been the capital of all the kings of the Yadu dynasty. The city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally. Some time ago, Vasudeva married Devaki. After the marriage, he mounted his chariot to return home with his new wife. Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki on the occasion of her marriage, took charge of the reins of the horses and became the chariot driver. He was surrounded by hundreds of golden chariots. Devaki's father, Devaka, was very much affectionate to his daughter. Therefore, while she and her husband were leaving home, he gave her a dowry of 400 elephants nicely decorated with golden chariots, 10,000 horses, 1,800 chariots, and 200 very beautiful young maidservants fully decorated with ornaments. When Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, An embodied voice addressed him. An unembodied voice addressed him. You foolish rascal. The eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you. Kamsa was a condemned person in the Bhoja dynasty because he was envious and sinful. Therefore, upon hearing this omen from the sky, he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand and took up his sword with his right hand to sever her head from her body. Wanting to pacify Kamsa, who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister, the great soul, Vasudev, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him in the following words. So we can see that Kamsa was a complete demon. He had no concern whatsoever for his sister. The brother should protect his sister. Actually, they were like cousins because she was the daughter of Devak. And she was the daughter of Devaka, and he was the son of Ugrasena. So they were like cousins, but considered like brother and sister in Vedic society. So he had no mercy whatsoever. We see that Vasudeva was a very sober person, even though faced with such a precarious situation. He kept a cool head, and he saw the way how to pacify even an envious person like Kamsa. Vasudeva said, "My dear brother-in-law Kamsa, you are the pride of your family, the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities. How could such a qualified person as you kill a woman, your own sister, especially on the occasion of her marriage? O great hero, one who takes birth is sure to die. One may die today or after hundreds of years, but death is sure for every living entity." So in this way, he spoke to him philosophically. And gradually, he was able to pacify the cruel Kamsa. So, as your younger sister, this poor girl, Devaki, is like your own daughter and deserves to be affectionately maintained. You are merciful, and therefore you should not kill her. Indeed, she deserves your affection. O best of the Kuru dynasty, Kamsa was fiercely cruel and was actually a follower of the Rakshasas. So he did not care about the results of sinful activities, either in this life or the next. When Vasudeva saw that Kamsa was determined to kill his sister, he thought very deeply. Considering the imminent danger of death, he thought of another plan to stop Kamsa. He said, "By delivering all my sons to Kamsa," he considered, "by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Kamsa will give up his immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I have nothing to fear." After thus considering the matter, as far as knowledge would allow, Vasudeva submitted his proposal to the sinful Kamsa with great respect. Vasudeva's mind was full of anxiety because his wife was facing danger. And in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, he externally smiled and spoke as follows. Vasudeva said, "O best of the sober, you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki because of what you have heard from the unseen omen. The cause of death will be her sons. Therefore I promise that when she gives birth to the sons from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them into your hands." Kamsa agreed to the logical arguments of Vasudeva, and having full faith in Vasudeva's words, he refrained from killing his sister. Vasudeva, being pleased with Kamsa, pacified him further and entered his own house. Each year thereafter, in due course, Devaki, the mother of God and all the demigods, gave birth to a child. Thus she bore eight sons, one after another, and a daughter named Subhadra. Vasudeva was very much disturbed by fear of becoming a liar and by breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son named Kirtiman into the hands of Kamsa. When Kamsa saw that Vasudev, completely situated in truthfulness and equipoised in giving him the child, he was very happy. Therefore, with a smiling face, he spoke as follows, "O Vasudev, you may take back your child and go home. I have no fear of your first child. It is the eighth child of you and Devaki I am concerned with, because that is the child by whom I am destined to be killed." Vasudev agreed and took his child back home, but because Kamsa had no character and no self-control, Vasudev knew he could not rely on Kamsa's words. Once the great saint Narada approached Kamsa and informed him of how the demonic persons who were a great burden on the earth were going to be killed. Thus Kamsa was placed into great fear and doubt. After the departure of the saint Narada, Kamsa thought all the members of the Yadu dynasty were demigods and that any of the children born from the womb of Devaki might be Vishnu. Fearing his death, he arrested Vasudeva and Devaki and chained them with iron shackles. Suspecting each of the children to be Vishnu, Kamsa killed them one after another because of the prophecy that Vishnu would kill him. In his previous birth, Kamsa had been a great demon named Kalanemi and had been killed by Vishnu. Upon learning this information from Narada, Kamsa became envious of everyone connected with the Yadu dynasty. Kamsa, the most powerful son of Ugrasena, even imprisoned his own father, the king of the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andhika dynasties, and personally ruled the states known as Surasena. So, such a rogue, such a demon. But, after all, this is all part of the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna. And one might ask, how was it that Narada Muni alarmed Kamsa even further? Because Kamsa, you know, he appeared to be pacified. He was going to let the different sons of Vasudeva and Devaki live. But this is all a very intimate and a complex leela of the Lord. So, these pastimes took place. And actually, later on, Devaki was able to see those dead sons again by the grace of Lord Krishna, because they had actually been demigods who appeared very briefly. And in that way, Narada, he expedited the appearance of Lord Krishna and ultimately also the death of King Kamsa. So, within the prison house, Vasudeva and Devaki, they had children year after year. And on the appearance of the, first of all, the seventh child was Baladev, who appeared in the womb of Devaki, but he was transferred into the womb of Rohini, who was another of Vasudev's wives, by the mystic power of the Lord, so that he would not be killed by King Kamsa. And then the eighth child was Lord Krishna. So now we'll hear of the birth of Lord Krishna. The demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood, and clouds gathered in the sky and very mildly thundered, making sounds like those of the ocean's waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in a dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon, because Devaki was of the same category as Lord Krishna. Vasudeva then saw the newborn child, who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes, and who bore in his four hands the four weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. On his chest was the mark of Sri Vatsa, and on his neck the brilliant Kastuba gem. Dressed in yellow, his body blackish like a dense cloud, his scattered hair fully grown, and his helmet and earrings sparkling uncommonly with the valuable gem by Durya. The child, decorated with a brilliant belt, armlets and bangles, and other ornaments, appeared very wonderful. When Vasudev saw his extraordinary son, his eyes were struck with wonder. In transcendental jubilation, he mentally collected 10,000 cows and distributed them among the Brahmanas as a transcendental festival. O Maharaj Parikit, descendant of King Bharata, Vasudev could understand that this child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan. Having concluded this without a doubt, he became fearless. Bowing down with folded hands and concentrating his attention, he began to offer prayers to the child who illuminated his birthplace by his natural effulgence. Vasudev said, "My Lord, you are the Supreme Person beyond material existence, and you are the Supersoul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge by which you can be understood as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I now know your position perfectly." Then Vasudev continued to offer many beautiful prayers, and his mother and Devaki, also the mother of Krishna, offered prayers. So then the Lord replied, "My dear mother, best of the chaste, in your previous birth, in the Svayambhuva millennium, you were known as Prishni, and Vasudev, who was the most pious Prajapati, was named Sutapa. When both of you were ordered by Lord Brahma to create progeny, you first underwent severe austerities by controlling your senses. Thus you spent 12,000 celestial years performing difficult activities of tapasya in consciousness of me. O sinless mother Devaki, after the expiry of 12,000 celestial years, in which you constantly contemplated me within the core of your heart with great faith, devotion, and austerity, I was very much satisfied with you. Since I am the best of all bestowers of benediction, I appeared in the same form of Krishna to ask you to take from me the benediction you desired. You then expressed your desire to have a son exactly like me. Since I find no one else as highly elevated as you in simplicity and other qualities of good character, I appeared in this world as Prishni Garba, or one who is celebrated as having taken birth from Prishni. In the next millennium, I again appeared from the two of you, who appeared as my mother Aditi and my father Kashyapa. I was known as Upendra, and because of being a dwarf, I was also known as Vamana. O supremely chaste mother, I, the same personality, have now appeared of you both as your son for the third time. Take my words as truth. I have shown you this form of Vishnu just to remind you of my previous births. Otherwise, if I appeared like an ordinary human child, you would not have believed that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has indeed appeared." After thus instructing his mother and father, the Supreme Lord Krishna remained silent. In their presence, by his internal energy, he then transformed himself into a small human child. In other words, he transformed himself into his original form, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Svayam. So he actually showed that forearm form just to convince them. And actually, Mother Devaki also requested him to please assume a form of an ordinary child, a two-armed form. Otherwise, people would think it was very strange. And also Kamsa would immediately recognize who he was. Thereafter, exactly when Vasudev, being inspired by the Supreme Lord, was about to take the newborn child from the delivery room, Yogamaya, the Lord's spiritual energy, took birth as the daughter of the wife of Maharaj Nanda. By the influence of Yogamaya, all the doorkeepers fell fast asleep, their senses unable to work, and the other inhabitants of the house also fell deeply asleep. When the sun rises, the darkness automatically disappears. Similarly, when Vasudev appeared, the closed doors, which were strongly pinned with iron and locked with iron chains, opened automatically. Since the clouds in the sky were mildly thundering and showering, and Antanaga, an expansion of the Supreme Lord, followed Vasudeva, beginning from the door with hoods expanded to protect Vasudeva and the transcendental child. Because of the constant rain sent by the river, by the demigod Indra, the river Yamuna was filled with deep water, foaming about with fiercely whirling waves. But as the great Indian Ocean had formally given way to Lord Ramchandra by allowing him to construct a bridge, the river Yamuna gave way to Vasudeva and allowed him to cross. When Vasudeva reached the house of Nanda Maharaj, he saw that all the cowherd men were fast asleep. Thus he placed his own son on the bed of Yasoda, picked up her daughter, an expansion of Yoga Maya, and then returned to his residence, the prison house of Kamsa. Vasudeva placed the female child on the bed of Devaki, bound his legs with iron shackles, and thus remained there as before. Exhausted by the labor of childbirth, Yasoda was overwhelmed with sleep and unable to understand what kind of child had been born of her. My dear King Pariket, the doors inside and outside the house closed as before. Thereafter, the inhabitants of the house, especially the watchmen, heard the crying of the newborn child and awakened from their beds. Kamsa immediately got up from bed, thinking, "Here is Kala, the supreme time factor, who has taken birth to kill me." Thus overwhelmed, his hair scattered on his head, he at once approached the palace where the child had been born. Devaki piteously appealed to Kamsa, "My dear brother, don't kill this girl. She will be your daughter-in-law. It is unworthy of you to kill a woman. By the influence of destiny, you have already killed many babies, each of them as bright and beautiful as fire. But kindly spare this daughter. Give her to me as your gift." Piteously embracing her daughter and crying, Devaki begged Kamsa for the child, but he was so cruel that he chastised her and forcibly snatched the child from her hands. Kamsa, who was sitting on his knees, grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. The child, Yogamaya Devi, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and appeared in the sky as Devi, the goddess Durga with eight arms, completely equipped with weapons. The goddess Durga was decorated with flower garlands, smeared with sandalwood pulp, and dressed with excellent garments and ornaments made of valuable jewels. Holding in her hands a bow, trident, arrows, a shield, a sword, a conch shell, a disc, and a club, and being praised by celestial beings like Apsaras, Kinnaras, Urgas, Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, who worshipped her with all kinds of presentations, she spoke as follows, "O Kamsa, you fool, what will be the use of killing me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has been your enemy from the very beginning, and who will certainly kill you, has already taken his birth somewhere else. Therefore, do not unnecessarily kill other children." After speaking to Kamsa in this way, the goddess Durga, Yogamaya, appeared in different places such as Varanasi and became celebrated by different names like Annapurna Durga, Kali, and Bhadra. After hearing the words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa was struck with wonder. Thus he approached Vasudeva and Devaki, released them immediately from their shackles, and very humbly spoke as follows, "Alas, my brother-in-law, my sister, I am indeed so sinful that exactly like a Rakshasa who eats his own child, I have killed so many sons born of you. Being merciful and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a Brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing." We can see that, you know, he had some realizations. But because he was so much overwhelmed by his mind and senses, he couldn't control himself. So, again and again, he would come back to a performance of demonic and sinful activities. And in fact, Kamsa, you know, after apologizing to Vasudeva and Devaki and repenting, then again he began to try to find out Krishna. And he began to kill all the newborn children in the whole area in an attempt to
to find Krishna and to get rid of him. So in this way, he repeatedly performed sinful and demoniac activities, but of course he was unable to find Krishna because Krishna and Balaram were safely concealed in the house of Nanda Maharaj. Thus, Lord Krishna, although born of Vasudeva and Devaki, was actually brought up by Nanda and Yasoda as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. And thus, he came to perform those most intimate Vrindavan pastimes, just as we were seeing earlier. So many beautiful pastimes of the Lord with the gopis and with the elderly members of the community. So these Vrindavan pastimes are also going on in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan. So they're being duplicated by the Lord here on the earthly planet. Factually, the demons like Kamsa, they're not there in the spiritual sky. This pastime of killing Kamsa and other demons is a pastime which takes place only when the Lord appears within the material creation. And he moves from one universe to another. His pastimes are constantly going on. Just like they were performed here 5,000 years ago. After that, Lord Krishna left this planet and he went to another universe and performed his pastime. In this way, he's moving from one universe to the next. Prabhupada explained, just as the sun is always present, but in different parts of the earth, the sun is perceived at different times as being present. Now we don't perceive the sun as being present, but say in England, the sun is, it's daytime now. So in the same way, the pastimes of Lord Krishna were manifested here 5,000 years ago. Now they're not directly manifested, but they're being manifested in another universe. And of course they're always being manifested in the spiritual sky. But for that devotee who becomes completely pure in heart and always meditates on Krishna, the pastimes of the Lord will become manifested within his heart by dint of his pure devotion. Because Krishna reveals himself to his pure devotee. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, Krishna says, I give the intelligence by which they can come to me. And out of compassion for them, I, dwelling within their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So, Krishna, he cleanses the heart of the devotee. Shinvatam sva kata Krishna punya shravana kirtana. Yabhadrasto yabhadrani vidunoti suritsatam. Lord Krishna, who is situated as the super soul within everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So, factually, Lord Krishna is non-different from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is described that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it is compiled by Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people. It is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. So Krishna, even though he departed from this planet 5,000 years ago, he is still present with us in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is also said that the Bhagavat Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam, is as brilliant as the sun. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. So, just as he is present in the form of the Bhagavatam, he is also present in the form of the deity, and he is also present in the form of his holy name. To close it. Will the curtains open again, or they won't open till midnight? Okay. Jai Sri Sri Radha Giridhari Ki.
Jai.
Jagannath Subhadra Baladev Ki.
Jai.
Rishi Gornitai Ki. Sri Krishna Janmashtami Ki. These pastimes of Lord Krishna, about his appearance and activities, one can develop love for him. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo vedi tatvata chaktva deham punar janma naiti mam iti surjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving this body, take birth again in this material world, but he attains to my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So this is the way to go back to Godhead and go to that place where one can participate eternally in the pastimes of Krishna. One has to regularly hear these pastimes, learn these pastimes, remember them within his heart, and constantly chant the all auspicious holy names of the Lord, and render service to the Lord also. Perform as much as he can to help to spread the message of Lord Krishna, and to help to maintain the temple of Krishna and to expand the temple of Lord Krishna. Just as we are now developing a Bhakti Bhavan project as a beautiful temple for Sri Sri Radha Giridhari. So in this way, anyone who helps in that endeavor, he will receive mercy of the Lord and he will become purified. So Krishna, he doesn't necessarily need a big temple, but Krishna, we are building a temple for Krishna. Krishna is giving that opportunity to us to render some service to him. So that's why Krishna has appeared in this world. That's why he takes the form of the deity, just to give a chance to the souls who have fallen in this world, just to give a chance for them to revive their relationship with him and thus purify their consciousness and go back to the spiritual world. So we should always remember that Krishna is giving us this opportunity. We should not miss this opportunity. Human life is very short.